It's great to be here to speak directly to the woke mob.
The liberals have basically made up this whole agenda that guacamole is made of avocados. It's not the truth.
Ticked off, tee off. This is it.
Scobody boom boom. Scobody dog.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Happy Monday, April 10th. I guess it's Easter Monday?
Easter Monday.
Is that a, that's not like a federal holiday, is it?
No, but I do.
The bank holiday?
I do know some people are off.
Oh, well, congratulations to those who are off today. We are not. We are in the office. And, you know, it'd be nice to start a Monday on a happier story than the breaking news we've heard coming in this morning. And we're not going to spend a ton of time on this because it is a developing story, and I'm not sure we know much yet. But as of this morning, have you heard of it? Is it confirmed 4 or 5?
As far as dead?
Yeah.
I believe it's 5.
I've been seeing some 4, some 5, but at least 5 people, we're going to say with that, at least 5 people were killed and 6 others were injured in a shooting at a bank in downtown Louisville, Kentucky this morning, the police have reported so far. Paul Humphrey, who is the deputy chief of the Louisville Metro Police Department, said that the police received calls about a shooting at Old National Bank around 8:30 a.m., and when they arrived on the scene, they encountered active gunshots still being fired inside the location. Chief Humphrey said that the suspected gunman, who has not been named, was confirmed dead at the scene. And they do not exactly know what the circumstances of his death are at this time, and not known what his motive might have been. And I don't know if there is much more than that so far.
The only thing that I've seen updated is that it is 8 injured now.
Okay.
And 2 are in critical conditions. So that's kind of the latest that we have on that.
Do we have a sound clip from on the scene so far?
The shooter was confirmed to be dead on the scene. We do not know exactly the circumstances of his death at this time. 5 people have been confirmed to have been killed inside. At least 6 were transported to University of Louisville Hospital, including 1 officer with various injuries.
So that is pretty much where we have it right now.
Although I did see this update from 30 minutes ago from Washington Post. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who's a Democrat. That's kind of surprising for Kentucky.
I know.
I was a little surprised. I was just...
Yeah.
That's not pertinent to the story whatsoever, but I was a little surprised by that. 2 of the people who died were his close friends.
Oh, I thought only one was. I thought one died. The other was hospitalized.
Right now, Washington Post is saying 2 of his close friends were killed in the shooting, and another was injured. And so he had said this morning, "I have a very close friend that didn't make it today, and I have another close friend who didn't either, and one who's at the hospital that I hope is going to make it through." And it's hard to imagine. I mean, that's an interesting detail of the story, because so often with these, you know, almost daily, if not weekly, shootings that feel random, the people who are the elected officials, whether it's the mayors, the governors, seem fairly disconnected or not connected at all to the victims. And so to know that in this situation, the governor knew 3 of the people, 2 of which have died and 1 who's been injured, is very interesting. And I don't have much more to say about it because there's not much more to say without more information, but it felt negligent not to at least acknowledge that this is happening.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure, just like we did with the Covenant School exactly 2 weeks ago.
Gosh, that's hard to believe. Yeah, it
exactly 2 weeks, two weeks ago. It was during the show.
Yep.
2 weeks ago. Within 24 hours, there was a lot more information on the shooter. I still don't know if we know motive for that one. But it doesn't matter. I mean, does it matter? I don't know. It's such, like, and as we, I think it's like, we wait to have an explanation because maybe an explanation makes us feel better. But what does it actually give us? Knowing more details of what caused this? Because it's like, does having more information make us feel like we might be able to avoid it? That somehow, if we, you know, it's only this case because of this person who had gone to this school and was bullied, and I didn't go to a school like that. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why. And I'm not saying it doesn't, but it's interesting, the psychological phenomenon of, like, why more details about mass shootings make us feel better, to give it some kind of explanation.
But you think about Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think we're looking for something that we think is gonna make us feel better, and it never does. Right?
It certainly never does. But it's like it's because I'm sure you and I will discuss what should we talk about tomorrow, as we do daily, and this will pop up as like, should we spend more time talking about what we learned from between yesterday's show and today's show, to talk about another mass shooting. And, you know, we're going to have a guest in the noon hour who is Iranian. She's a PhD student in chemistry at UWM. And we were introduced because I've been wanting to talk to someone who is in the Iranian diaspora. And in the wake of all of the protests and everything that's been going on there, it's been not in the news as much, but is still, obviously, they have not overturned the Islamic Republic. And so, and even as of this morning, I read that they're doing, the Islamic Republic is doing even more crackdowns.
Oh, great.
In that they are going to start putting cameras in places to monitor women and what they're wearing. And so, her name's Seppi. I haven't asked her yet if she feels comfortable with her last name, because I know a lot of people who live abroad have felt, for those who have been speaking to the media, uncomfortable saying their full name just because they still have family back home.
Well, yeah, you don't want to put them in danger.
Of course. And so she's going to be in here, and so I'm really looking forward to talking to her. But it's such different stories, but also in the things that keep happening. And how do you continue to talk about situations that feel almost daily and bring anything new to the table, but like you still feel like you have to talk about them? Because that's how I feel this morning, as far as, I mean, without knowing more, but it feels like it fits the pattern that we hear every 2 weeks now.
Not even.
But yeah. Coming up also on today, like I said, Seppi, who's a PhD student in chemistry at UWM, who is also Iranian. And she has an interesting story, because I think she does not feel like she will be able to go back to Iran anytime soon because of help that she's given friends who are there. And, you know, just hearing more about her experience of kind of living parallel lives of being a student here and simultaneously being so worried and invested in what happens at home. And I also think it's an interesting perspective, as sometimes the theme of loving your country but questioning and critiquing your government comes up a lot in our country. And I think every friend I have ever had that is Iranian has so much Iranian pride in their culture and in their country, but not for their government. And so I think it'll be really interesting to hear more about that from her.
I have to say, I am somewhat surprised that they allow their students to leave the country.
But that's that is what's interesting, I think, and to talk to her a little bit more about this, is in the World Wide Web era of information getting out, and because I've heard some theories as to why the young generation that has been really taking charge of the protests, you know, if you want to call it a revolution, and been so not scared, is because they can see how the rest of the world, or so much of the world, lives, because of how vast and broad the Iranian diaspora is of people who, I mean, and it started in the original revolution, right? Like, how many people left the country? And, you know, I lived in L.A. Like, there's a lot of Iranians in L.A., right? Like, right. And it's true of how many, and, like, it's a culture that values school. So the amount of them are doctors and lawyers and dentists. And so I think there is such a, social capital on continuing your education.
Higher education.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting. So I'm sure you can ask her as far as what the politics around staying versus leaving is, because they still have good universities. Like, the University of Tehran is very reputable. So that'll be a really, really interesting conversation. And then we're going to talk to Catherine Auerbach, who is the executive director of Moving Out, which is an organization offering housing solutions for people and families with disabilities. We're talking to her at 12:30. And then at 1, we touched on this last week during the 3 headlines and a lie, but in fact, this was one of the true headlines. There are 3 Republicans in North Carolina who would like to legislate and ban participation trophies. And so in the last hour, in the no sour, haha, fun time hour, let's have a conversation about participation trophies. And maybe legally banning them is a little harsh, but as far as, you know, can we all get on the same page with this? Like, what is the value of a participation trophy if there is one? Because
did you get them as a kid?
No, I think, I don't remember getting one. I think maybe there were some swim meets where everyone who participated got like a ribbon.
Okay.
But certainly not in like basketball tournaments and stuff like that. But we're going to talk about that in the third hour. And then at 11:30, when we come back, we're going to kind of set up what happened late Friday when it comes to the abortion pill. There's 2 conflicting in limbo court cases that inevitably this is going to end up in the United States Supreme Court. So we're going to set up the case at 11:30. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who is an OBGYN in the Green Bay area, friend of civic media. You can hear her often on Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. She's going to join to talk more about that case, where we go from here. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And, you know, sometimes they say Fridays are a slow news day. And last Friday was certainly not a slow news day. We had a ton of things to talk about before this story broke.
Yes.
And then this story broke. You told me, because I think I had checked out for the holiday weekend, late afternoon.
Yeah, it was late afternoon when this came down.
So, over the weekend, we've talked about this case. We knew it was coming. We didn't know what the ruling was going to be, but we knew that there was a case in Texas that was challenging the FDA's 20-plus year approval.
23 years.
23 years on mifepristone, which is one of the 2 pills you take, people take to have a medical abortion. And over the weekend, that federal judge in Texas ruled to suspend the FDA's approval of mifepristone. And for what reason? I don't know the legal reasoning they have right now, because again, I am not a lawyer, but you know, the drug's been on the market for 23 years and helps account for more than half of U.S. abortions. And in his 67-page opinion, the judge sided with the drug's challengers, who argued the FDA rushed mifepristone's approval and chose, quote, politics over science. So if upheld, the Texas ruling would pull mifepristone from shelves and throw the future of the abortion pill into question. And this includes in states where abortion is still legal.
Right. So this would be a nationwide ban.
Yes.
Coming from this one judge in Texas.
One judge in Texas. And I said this to my parents and my brother over the weekend since we were all together for the holiday. And everyone had this. They're like, how can one judge in Texas do that for the whole country? I was like, I don't know. It's how the federal system works. I was like, I didn't go to law school. But the plot twist here is less than an hour later, a different federal judge in Washington ordered the FDA to keep the status quo and maintain access to mifepristone in 17 states plus D.C. that wanted to protect and expand access. He argues, or that judge argues, that in part it was unusual for the judicial wing to intervene in executive branch regulatory decisions. So now we have two competing, dueling rulings on this. And so now the abortion pill is still available for now. The Texas judge's ruling wouldn't have gone into effect until the end of this week to allow federal government enough time to appeal. But the Biden administration has already done that. And so the next step is a conservative-leaning appeals court is now expected to take up the case. So it would move from that federal judge in Texas to an appeals court. In that court, it's already conservative-leaning. But experts are saying that the dueling rulings will most likely put the case before
The Supreme Court.
Did we have an update on Clarence Thomas?
Oh.
I didn't read anything about that since him saying, I didn't know. I didn't know that I couldn't do this. And so now I know. So now I'll report it.
Oh, well, there's other stuff on Clarence's and his buddy.
Oh, great.
Mr. Crow.
So I'm sure that doesn't mean anything that he's ever going to resign or get impeached, but he's going to continue just to be able to make decisions on women's lives. But what's interesting about this, and we're going to talk a lot more in the next segment with Dr. Kristen Lierley on how safe this drug is.
Compared to other very, very popular medications.
Including Viagra.
No kidding.
This is safer than Viagra. But also, because I know there is different, what workarounds potentially exist. I think talking about the political nature of this and not the medical nature of this ruling, just from a doctor's point of view and someone who has dedicated her life to working with women and babies. So we'll do that in the next segment. But what I think is interesting is, you know, this is a losing political issue, as we've seen as recent as last week in Wisconsin, as we've seen in Kansas, as we've seen in Michigan. And we can't get into all of it now, but besides a handful of Republicans, they were pretty quiet on this.
They are silent on this. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Nobody. So Senator Cindy Hyde Smith of Mississippi said something. She said, today's ruling on abortion drugs is a victory for pregnant mothers and their unborn children. I'm grateful the court reined in the U.S. FDA for recklessly violating the law and jeopardizing patient safety. And Tim Scott from South Carolina tweeted a video of AOC discussing the ruling of the option, and he said hogwash. And other than that, they were tweeting about Elon banning Substack from Twitter. They were tweeting about Easter. They were tweeting about defending Clarence Thomas. They were tweeting and talking about basically everything but this.
Charles Grassley from Iowa put a picture of his vacuum cleaner on Twitter.
What was the context?
He has got a nickname for it, and the vacuum was going to be getting a big workout because he had to clean before Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So We can maybe get into that a little bit later with Dr. Kristen Lyerly when we come back. But certainly when we are here, she will answer our medical questions, where we go from here questions. If you have questions for Dr. Kristen Lyerly, text or call them in 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. And we will be back in just a minute.
Look very carefully at maybe you.
All I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill. All these years I've stayed.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And our guest this segment is Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's an obstetrician and gynecologist in the Green Bay area. You've likely seen her on many different ads in the last election cycle, but also how often are you on Up North News with Pat?
Twice a week.
Twice
usually.
A week.
We do Hometown Health on Thursday, and then on Monday I usually just come on to do like On This Day in History, and you know, try to wake everybody up for the week.
So good for you, for because that show is on from 6 to 8. So you're up. I'm up that early,
yeah.
But I am not ready to talk to anyone yet, or talk on the radio, let alone.
I have learned that I have to like get some coffee in me and then like talk to there's nobody up at my house. So I have to have some sort of a conversation with like the cat or the wall or something before I jump on the radio.
Do some like vocal warm-ups like you're an actor.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to invite you on because in light of Friday's news, and I guess nothing should surprise us these days in the war that is going on around access to abortion, despite it being such an obviously unpopular political issue, it doesn't mean that there aren't people who are still trying to force it through legal means. And I guess before we get into more of the details of explaining what mifepristone is, how safe it is, I guess just as a doctor who has dedicated your life to helping people have babies or not have babies, what was your reaction when this came down on Friday?
Hey, you're right. I have dedicated my life to making sure that my patients have access to the information and resources that they need to be able to make their own choices within the context of their own lives. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to, whether we're talking about abortion care or contraception or infertility or managing your blood pressure, it doesn't matter. You have to have that information and those resources to be able to do what you need to do. So, I mean, Friday wasn't a surprise. We've known for well over a month that this was coming. It was a little bit of a surprise that it happened on Friday and that the other court ruling happened on Friday as well. But then again, when you think back to it, they love to do this when it's almost the weekend, it's a holiday, mm-hmm. Nobody's paying attention. They think they're going to get away with less backlash. But I don't think that was the case. I think that there's been plenty of backlash and it's lasted throughout the weekend. And here we are on Monday talking about it because we need to keep banging the drum and make sure that people understand how wrong this is on a lot of different levels and that it prevents people from getting access to much needed health care.
Well, this is also the same judge that wasn't he trying to limit who could even go in the courtroom during the trial because he knew how much backlash there was going to be around this and how much press and anger, I would imagine. And mm-hmm. So the fact that they tried to sneak this in, and I mean, to a certain extent, they did sneak it in because, like I said, had Jane not texted, I probably would have seen it eventually on Twitter, but it was a holiday weekend. And so the amount of people who had kind of been like, all right, I'm taking a break for the weekend with my family and not showing up necessarily to a rally, I'm sure that that had something to do with it. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to talk about it now. And I'm impressed with how quickly the Washington court like was ready to go as soon as basically in response to within an hour. And so I know you're not a lawyer, but how much have you, through your work, through your colleagues, through other lawyers you know who do work on the issue. Have you heard much as far as the legal standing of the case or the arguments being made and how, I mean, I know there's no, there's not a lot to be said as far as what our U.S. Supreme Court will or will not do, but as far as actually what the law says, do you know much about it?
No.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm not a lawyer.
No, I know.
But there's a lot of conjecture. People are talking about it. Could go this way. It could go that way. It's probably going to go to the Supreme Court. What will they do? People want to know because this is something that is really important, not just in the abortion realm, but this is a medication that we use to manage miscarriages, which, as a reminder, miscarriages are spontaneous abortions. That is the medical term for a miscarriage. And the treatment for a miscarriage is the same thing that we do for an abortion, whether it's the medication route or the surgical route. So what this really means to patients is that they will have, if this were to go through and it were to prevent us from being able to access this medication, they'll still have the option of a medication management for abortion or miscarriage, which is all we can really do here in Wisconsin anyway, is miscarriages. So this really impacts people who are suffering already with miscarriages. But all it means is that the medication that we can offer them is less effective than what we are able to do with the mifepristone as part of the regimen. So it means that they'll have to go to the doctor more, and they'll potentially have to have a surgery, and they'll need somebody to take care of their kids and take a day off of work and spend more money on healthcare. I mean, it is just totally inefficient, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Because remind me, because the other pill, there's typically two pills, right? So maybe walk us through the process of how this usually, whether it's because of a miscarriage, whether it's because of an abortion, but an opted in abortion. But as far as how it typically works, and is there medical workarounds if this actually gets banned, / is there going to be other ways of getting it, just not through a pharmacy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way we've been doing it, is online.
Yeah.
For abortion care anyway. Anybody can go online and order abortion pills. It's not hard. But it's not the way I like to take care of my patients either. Yeah. You know, when you are suffering, when you have a problem, whether it's you have an unwanted pregnancy or you are pregnant with a wanted pregnancy and you're bleeding, you go to your doctor because you have a problem and you're scared and you need information. So let's say you're suffering from a miscarriage. Say it's a wanted pregnancy and you're bleeding, and we do an ultrasound and we discover that this is a spontaneous abortion. This is a miscarriage. So then I have to look my patient in the eye and say, typically, I can offer you two medications, mifepristone, which stops a pregnancy from developing, and then misoprostol, which softens the cervix and causes uterine contractions. And that's 96% effective. So odds are, if you choose to manage your miscarriage this way, this is all you're going to need. And I'll be here with you, and I'll walk with you as you are suffering and afterwards to make sure that we're making plans for what happens after this. But now without the mifepristone, I have to say to them, this regimen is about 85% effective, so significantly less effective. Plus, you may have to use this regimen more than once, which means that the cramping that goes along with it, you'll probably have twice as much cramping, maybe even more than that, more bleeding, more uncertainty. It's going to take more time. And if it doesn't work, there's more of a chance that you have to come back for a surgery. It just does not serve our patients. It does not serve the women and families of Wisconsin. It takes us away from our jobs. It takes us away from our families. It causes stress. There are just so many different aspects, so many different reasons why this is wrong.
It absolutely is wrong. And it once again feels like it's so misguided, and there's such a lack of actual understanding of the medical side of this and the science behind it versus just abortion bad, must ban.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's an obstetrician and gynecologist in Green Bay, and about the ban that happened on, well, not the ban, the court ruling that happened on Friday from Texas that overruled the FDA's approval of mifepristone, then the countersuit that came out in Washington that basically has put that in limbo. And inevitably, this is a case that's going to end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. But I guess to go back to the medicine side of this, because the challenge is basically that the FDA rushed its decision 23 years ago to approve mifepristone. And
5 million people, Kristen, 5 million people have used this medication. We have 23 years of experience in addition to all of the science and evidence that got it to the point to being FDA approved and all of those years of experience since then. So explain to me how one judge with no medical training and a political prerogative can dismantle this entire system. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense because are there any, like what... As far, because I saw a meme over the weekend, and I think this is true, is that like Viagra is, what are some of the other prescribed FDA approved drugs that you can name off the top of your head that have more side effects and more danger associated with them than this drug?
Oh, Viagra is the go-to because it's just so perfectly juxtaposed. But, you know, ibuprofen and Tylenol have similar dangerous profiles. Like ibuprofen and Tylenol are as dangerous as mifepristone.
Wow.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. This is a safe, effective medication. And really, really importantly, if your listeners take anything away from today, it's still available. Mifepristone is still FDA approved, despite all of the chaos and all of the stuff that you've heard recently. It's still FDA approved. It's still available. It will always continue to be safe and effective because we know that it is.
Dr. Kristen, I just think the other thing that's important for people to remember is this is indicative that this kind of stuff is not going to stop. And I firmly believe that if they're able to do this and get rid of these medical abortion pills, certainly birth control is next. There is a very dogged group that wants to see all birth control banned, and that's going to spill over then into IVF services. Correct.
You're so right. Oh, you're so right, Jane. Well, and you know, really, IVF services are just another aspect of this abortion issue because when we offer someone IVF services, we create embryos. Mm-hmm. And all of those embryos are not viable, not used. What happens to the extra embryos? So inevitably, when a state bans abortion, all of the IVF clinics end up leaving the state because they can't practice and take care of their patients because of those bans. This was what kept abortion legal in states like North Dakota, where it has been under siege for such a long time, but they don't want to lose access to their IVF. And, you know, neither do we. We want people who want to be pregnant to be able to have that opportunity to grow their families. We believe in that. So this is not a simple are you for or against situation. This is a complicated scenario that requires us to be able to make our own decisions without political interference.
What is the status of IVF clinics in Wisconsin since June? Have people been leaving?
So I think in Wisconsin, because we're still so on the bubble about what's going to happen here, there are a lot of people who are making contingency plans, but not following through with it yet because they do have hope. But you probably saw that ad in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the Committee to Protect Healthcare put in there right before the election with the 300 healthcare providers who signed on in support of Judge Janet, not necessarily because we think she's going to overturn the 1849 ban, but because we recognize that her values are aligned with our values. And she believes in getting politicians out of the exam room. There's no room for politicians or the judicial system to be in there with you as you are trying to make your own very personal healthcare decisions. Doctors are not inherently political. Doctors want to be as far away from lawyers and government as possible. But it's just gotten to the point, especially for those of us who are taking care of women, that we can't take care of our patients. We can't offer them the services that they need and deserve because of all of this political interference. So we're stepping up, and it's uncomfortable, but we're doing it.
And I realize you have no control over this, Dr. Kristen, but I think Viagra pills should be cost like $1,000 a pop.
No, because I take Viagra for my Raynaud's syndrome. You use Viagra for
really?
Other things, too.
What is Raynaud's syndrome?
Oh, it's this crazy thing where when I get cold, my fingers turn white because the circulation isn't great in my fingers. Yeah, it happens a lot in the winter. So here's another example, Jane, of how our personal feelings affect other people's healthcare. So you have to leave it up to people and their doctors and science and evidence to make those decisions.
That is fascinating. It reminds me of Botox when people are like, oh, I use Botox for like I stop sweating or it helps with migraines. And there's all this other miracle things that it does besides just smooth out your forehead. And so
bladders. It helps with bladders that aren't working correctly.
See, mm-hmm. This is why you can't make blanket statements on people's healthcare. All right. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will still be here when we come back. If you have a question for her, 844-967-2789. That is 844-96-PARTY. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
A couple in my arms, another's on the way. Chicken's done tore up her nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill. This incubator is overused, because you...
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who is an obstetrician and gynecologist in Green Bay, talking about our reactions and, you know, the details of a drug that is perfectly safe and has been used for over 20 years that is in limbo now because of one Texas judge who decided to side with people who were challenging the FDA's approval of this drug 20 years ago, that it was rushed and political back then, and now potentially could limit access to the method that over half of the people seeking abortion care use when getting an abortion, and is also used for miscarriages. And, you know, Dr. Lyerly, when you said right before we went to the break that most doctors don't want to be political. You are pretty political, but I think that's probably only through, and I guess what inspired you to kind of, because you ran for assembly, that's how you and I first met. And even since 2020, after that race, you stayed very political. I know how outspoken you've been and how involved you've been. I mean, you've gone to the White House and since Roe was overturned. And so I guess, do you feel like you've just realized that for you and the practice that you have, the two have become, even though they shouldn't be linked, they're inextricably linked between the politics and reproductive health?
They are inextricably linked for all of us, but I think it's just so uncomfortable for doctors to step into this arena. I have always done a bunch of advocacy work, very interested in women's health advocacy, but you know what it was for me? And this, it was the third anniversary of this happening. We went to the polls 3 years ago on Friday here in Wisconsin. Do you remember what happened in 2020?
I had just moved back.
There was this pandemic. Yeah. Yes, the pandemic was happening. We didn't know what was safe. We didn't know, did you need masks, not need masks, 6 feet apart? Could we be inside together? Should we not? So remember, the governor said, let's not have this spring election. And the legislature said, oh no, you have to go. Because of course they're thinking people aren't going to turn out to vote. And they love it when people don't vote. And the governor said, this can't happen. And it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court sided with the legislature, of course. And so we went to the polls. And here it was April. And it was gloomy. And there were hardly any polls open. In Green Bay, we usually have over 30 polling sites. There were two open. So although we had already voted by absentee, my son and I went down there to go see what the voting lines looked like, and they went all the way around the parking lot at East High School. The line stretched probably half a mile. It was ridiculous. And so I came home that night and just started talking to people. We can't do this anymore. We can't live in this crazy state. What is happening with this pandemic? Doctors have to be able to speak up and say, this is what's happening. This is how we need you to pull together. Science and medicine can do so much. And I really felt like maybe the voice of a doctor during a pandemic would have some sort of an influence. But the pandemic itself became so inherently political. And although we got pretty far in my assembly district, we didn't win because of how grossly gerrymandered and partisan we are. And we've actually ended up more divided than ever before. So once this election was over, then we turned our attention, because it was never about holding a seat. It was always about making a difference. Mm-hmm. So then we turned our attention to Fair Maps, which is really where we met. And you came up Green Bay and you did a rally for us up here. Yeah. And man, people started, like, that's an issue that really resonates with people, because people understand that they're not being represented in this state. And so once we got involved with Fair Maps, and almost 80% of Wisconsinites said, nope, we want Fair Maps. We want to be represented. We want our representatives to talk to us and to hear us. And then we ended up with the same maps that we've got now.
A little bit worse.
They're worse. Right. So there is no end to what's happening in Wisconsin right now. And there are so many opportunities, unlike other states where everybody is kind of locked in, like Idaho. You know, Idaho is a horrible place to be. They are bleeding doctors. The people are rushing to the borders. It's so bad. They've even stopped doing their maternal mortality review committee in Idaho. They're not even investigating maternal deaths. When a mom dies associated with pregnancy, we always investigate those deaths to see what we can do differently in the future and prevent those deaths. But in Idaho, they're like, meh, that's how little they care about women. But Wisconsin is different, because we can change things here. We know this is a purple state, and we know that we are like a community here in this state. So the more that we can be those catalysts in our communities, not to push our agenda on people like what's happening now with the Republicans, but to bring people together and help them use their unified voices, that's what's going to drive our state forward. That's what our state is built on. So we're just starting to come back to that. And honestly, Kristen, I'm feeling so hopeful.
That was going to be my next question, because I think, you know, I think there was even Jane last week for the first time in a long time felt a little bit of hope.
It took me an hour and a half to identify what I was feeling, Dr. Lyle, because I hadn't experienced hope in so long.
But I guess in between your actual work, when you're seeing patients, between the political advocacy you've been doing, conversations you've been having, it feels to me that there is political momentum on the side of continuing to try to keep access available.
Yes.
Legally, things feel a little bit more precarious, but as far as where you're standing, at least where you are today, hopeful versus dreadful.
Hopeful, and not just regarding abortion access, okay, but regarding healthcare, because I think that as we've been fighting this abortion battle, we've also been seeing that our access to fundamental healthcare has been eroding. And I think everyone is getting to the point where they're not able to see their doctors, they're not able to afford their medications, they're not able to get the things that every one of us needs to be able to live our lives. So I think this is much bigger than abortion care.
I agree. Like, I think there, that's kind of the feeling that I had last week, at least in Wisconsin. But I think that there is, I don't know, between what happened in Tennessee, what happened here last mm-hmm. week, there just feels like there's momentum as far as people, like, we're not going to just let you dictate our lives anymore. And more people coming mm-hmm. together to see how things are actually, the systems, how all of these things work together. Like you said, like, healthcare is bigger than just abortion care, right? And it's how we have access to it. It's how I had this frustration of just navigating your insurance system and stuff like that, even when you have insurance. And so there's so much complexity to it, even when you have access and you have resources, let alone for people who don't. And so I am like you. I am more of a cockeyed optimist, and so I am also hopeful, but not withstanding the frustrations of a case like what happened on Friday. And so we will continue to watch it. We will continue to have Dr. Kristen Lyerly on the show, but you can always find her on Up North News with Pat Kreitlow on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Mondays and Thursdays,
excuse me. But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's always a joy. Thank you, ladies.
All right. Have a great day. All right. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, a conversation about what it's like to witness your country from afar go through the beginnings of potentially a revolution. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.